And that's normally a three-song or three-spoken word set that happens at this time. And tonight we are delighted to have a wonderful writer, Suzanne Owens, and she will be accompanied by Mike Santoro, who played on the keyboard earlier. Please give them a big welcome. Suzanne Owens, Mike Santoro.
I can't get away from the mic, right? If I look over there, you have to talk into the mic all the time. Oh, God. Okay. That's hard.
You'll see me. I just need it at the end. I just thought I would tell you. So.
Can you see him? Excuse me. He was helping me. Okay. You ready? Thank you, Ellen, so much. And everybody that's here, wonderful audience. The theme of our mini set is shows how the unconscious or conscious thoughts of children and animals can be aligned through nonverbal and emotional connections. And that's the theme. This is it's the first poem I ever wrote when I was 10. And my parents told me they were going to see a sick friend for an hour, and I was to stay inside until they returned. Instead, I took a walk down the street and came back and wrote my first poem about a horse who pulled a bread cart that came around to all the houses and delivered bread. And it's called The Bread Man's Horse. A bread man's horse stands solemnly through rain and winter's cutting sleet. He patiently awaits his master through winter's fog and summer's heat. The master brings the cruel whip down. Without a word, without a sound, this sad and lonely horse obeys. If he could speak, I wonder what the bread man's horse would say. This is called The Christmas Star, a play I was in when I was 9, the first time I was ever on the stage. And the director was an impatient and forceful woman who I was rather afraid of. This poem is about my first fearful moments on the stage at 9. The stagehand and the angel. Perhaps the old man had a grandchild my age. They studied the stars together. There's Neptune. Where's Venus? Or he recalled himself at 9 in a daze, trying to make sense of long division, the studded tail of the question tapering off the blackboard into the wall's crack. Although I saw you backstage through smoke studying your light plot of the Christmas star, or eating a sandwich, we never spoke. To most, you were just a toothless old stagehand, whiskers and baggy pant folds, working the switches and buttons. It was my first role, but after all these years, you are among my first memories that glow. Like a moth, every great actress is attracted to the light. I must try to step into its warmth. Even today, I can see you stationed between the ropes and the light board, winking at me, a crinkly wink from the black curtain, with a turn of your hand, fanned fingers as veined and as puckered as your face, you'd motion me, the lead angel, into my pool of light. I can feel my body bend in an arc at the knuckle. My left toes are making a shape like a scallop shell on the floor. I'm pivoting to the right. Pivoting. Now, two steps forward. One, two. At last, I am safe on the shores of heaven, standing in my cloud. Eyes front. I couldn't look back at you, but as I turned, as graceful as a real star, the pull of my incandescence billowed the curtain and wings shimmered above my head. Thank you. When I was older, I was still with the Toronto Children's Players, it was called, and we did a play at the University of Toronto called Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast. I thought the actor who played the Beast opposite my beauty couldn't possibly turn into a prince. That first audition almost knocked me over, blasting up to the theater in his Harley. Now I watch him limp downstage, dragging the fur costume, the heavy wooden ribcage constructed to double his size, and the built-up shoe. He sweats under the mask. He's so untrained, a primitive. I couldn't believe that tough, swaggering punk who mumbled his lines in a Brooklyn accent would carry me into his castle after our wedding. But how gracefully he sweeps his cape along the floor, hardly disturbing the dust particles and the light beam between us. Several times, I saw him slide a stiletto into the pocket of his jeans, as simply as I slid my father's antique watch into my Claiborne bag. He must think he's Brando or Jimmy Dean. Still, he can make this death appear so true, slumping by the settee, one leg crooked under him, mouth open, hair tangled in acne. He reaches for the goblet. Over Cokes and actor gossip, I learned he quit school at 15, burglarized a gun store, has a record, and served time. Well, I served tennis balls, won trophies, and studied drama. But he believes in this world of cardboard, paint, swords, spears, tin goblets, even his fake death. And yet, I know, etched under those purple velvet sleeves, tattoos of an inner city culture. Could it be he's grown used to lies? Didn't they blacken those blindsided alleys, those blighted tenements? Now he's whispering my name, the cue to make my entrance. I wipe my eyes on the puff of my sleeve, crying for the beast, or the beast beneath the costume, I don't know. Pancake number 5 and 9 on taffeta, a stain. Tears trace the color of wilt down my cheeks. I run through miles of curtains and corridored wilderness. My wet hand pounds the cardboard castle door. But all I can hear, the pounding of my own heart. Is he dead? Open the door. The door moans open. The eyes that shine through the slits in that mask, as they shone through the white scrim of my dream, are the eyes of a beast, a thief. I kneel on the floor, my arms around him. These claws I remove at last. I unglove his dumb paws, unsnap these seams of fur, open the structure enclosing his torso. And when I unmask the beast, the hard, cruel lines of his face fall aside. For a moment, I find not the face of a prince, but the face of the boy who slept sitting up, his back against the bedroom door, the one who stole guns for money to escape his drunken father, kept one for his own protection. I untwist the wires behind his ears, holding the lion's jaw in place. The mouth moves, the voice human. This is about a man and woman on a first date. It's called No Chemistry. Everybody knows what that's like. It's a dark, faraway town, and he has trouble seeing in the dark. You miscalculate time, suggest skipping dinner. He's never skipped dinner. Asks you if you do anything else with your hair. At the college jazz concert, you keep glancing at your students two rows back. During the lament, the stomp, and ragtime, he ceases to exist. On the way home, you say, I'm going to India, you know. But he likes his own bed, his own toothbrush, and has no desire to travel very far afield. His lack of syncopation is neither here nor there. This isn't Storyville on your doorstep. You've not been pitched into that harmonic scheme. Don't hear the long, trembling note, all the melodic variations, and frankly, you don't give a damn that he, a prosecution lawyer in white Cadillac who's left a wake of houses, eight children, and an ex-wife who he calls the saint, says he feels defensive and very sensitive to rejection.
Can I have that light, that little light thing? Great, thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
The embarrassing moment.
A woman is rushing down a city street, approaching a homeless man in the distance. He's sitting on the ground, leaning against a building. The voices you will hear are the thoughts of the woman and the homeless man.
Oh my God, I'm late again. Will I ever learn to leave a little early?
Well, here comes another one. A real heel clicker, moving like she's in a race.
I'm so worried about this appointment and the results of my biopsy.
She's even moving faster, now that she sees me.
Oh, I really hate this section of town. I feel so uncomfortable. So many homeless people. Like that guy sitting against the building. Is it their fault or what?
I really don't want anything from her.
I just hope he doesn't want any money from me.
All I want is for her to recognize that I exist.
And I hope he doesn't want to talk with me.
They're not talking to each other. They're walking around as if they don't exist. And they're invisible, looking straight ahead, avoiding eye contact, like they don't exist.
Am I scared? I wonder if I should just cross the street and avoid him.
Maybe I shouldn't be offended if they avoid me. They avoid each other.
Or am I embarrassed?
I've given up the feeling of embarrassment.
Maybe I'm just mad at myself. Maybe I feel guilty because I just wish he wasn't there.
I bet you'd feel better if I wasn't here.
How did he get there anyway? Leaning up against that building? All he needs is a shave and clean clothes. Could I feel I'm better than he is just because I made something of my life?
I was just like you once. I walked these same streets in a hurry to get somewhere important. Then things changed.
I wonder what his childhood was like. Did he come from a poor family, or did he even have a family? I wonder what really happened to him.
There was a flash of lights, screeching brakes. My wife was screaming. My son was calling, Daddy. I woke up in some hospital.
Scares me is that it could happen to me.
I knew they were gone. I didn't care, didn't continue, but didn't care.
What if I lost my job? Then my house? Then.
Didn't care about anything.
What if I lost my dear children?
The bills piled up. Before you know it, I'm standing outside of my own house looking up at it, wondering, does anything really matter?
What if I only have a few more months to live?
Why did I get to keep my life?
What would I do?
Oh no, she's slowing down. I think she's looking right at me.
I'm standing right in front of him now. We're looking at each other.
I am looking at you.
I'm looking at you.
And now
I am
looking
into your eyes. I can hear the sound of my own voice. I could be you.
You could be me.
You could be me.
I could be you.
Anything
could happen
to anyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Suzanne Owens and Mike Santoro. Please give them a big hand. I mentioned earlier this evening that we'd be having a guest host, and we do, and he'll be introducing a couple of performers before feature time. There'll be two more open mic performers before feature time, and then after feature time, a whole bunch. And Howie Rashba is going to be introducing folks. He'll be playing himself. He's a wonderful friend to our open mic, a wonderful guy, a superb performer. He'll be featuring here on January 24th. So I'd like to welcome Howie Rashba up, and he'll introduce the next two performers. Welcome, Howie Rashba.
Thank you so much.